If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like Arena Football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Everybody, this is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis alongside Jordan Heath Rawlings and Ryan Dixon. This week we are live from the World Cup of Hockey Fan Village at the Distillery District, about to open up to the public. We're in the hometown hockey truck and I'm drinking Ron McLean's water. Coming up in the next couple of hours, we will talk about the American League East and how this division is slipping away from the Blue Jays right now, because the Red Sox look like an absolute powerhouse. World Cup of Hockey, down to the short strokes. It's semifinal Saturday, Canada and Russia. We'll preview that as well. Look ahead to tomorrow's game between Sweden and Team Europe. And the NFL into week three, and the Patriots, apparently doesn't matter who they have behind center, they win. But, gents, we got to start with the Blue Jays, who go 4-3 on this West Coast road trip through Anaheim, through Seattle, which is good if not great. I think 5-2 would have been great if they'd completed the sweep against the Mariners. That would have, even losing two in Anaheim, you could have called that a great road trip. So it was a good road trip. Anytime you can go out west and take 4 of 7, that's not bad. They return home for the rest of the season against the American League East. That includes 4 against the Yankees, 3 against the Orioles, and then wrap up the season with 3 at Fenway Park. They take game 1 against the Yankees, and the problem in September has been the offense. But every once in a while, and it happened in game 2 of that series in Seattle, they'll give you a glimpse of maybe not what they were in 2015, but pretty damn close, Ryan.
Yeah, and even, it's funny, that last game in Seattle that they wound up losing and could have won a couple of times in extra innings, there was even a little bit of that, a little flicker of the old magic there, because oh, yeah, Bautista hit that home run in the top of the ninth, right, and you were like, oh yeah, I remember when they weren't done until the last out kind of thing. And you're right. I mean, had they ended up pulling off the sweep there, they really would have come home feeling well. So yeah, I mean, listen, all these guys didn't stop being good players in the course of a year, right? And there's still some pretty gaudy home run numbers on that team. I mean, you've got Encarnacion in the middle with over 40 bombs, and Donaldson could, you know, he's going to end up really close to there probably. But obviously the Jays are in a tough situation because everyone always speaks about them in the context of this sort of once in a lifetime 2 months where, yeah, they just couldn't, yeah, miss. I mean,
one
how many times do you see
offenses of all time?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's good. It's a good offense. Like, this is a team that can put up runs in bunches. They don't put them up in bunches every 4 innings like they used to last year. But it's you're right. It's unfair to judge them based on that. But I think after the beginning of September, if you had told people at the beginning of September the Jays are going to be in a race and they're going to go on this road trip against two of the lesser teams, although Seattle was making a run, and they're going to go 4-3, a lot of people would have thought that that would be disappointing. But given, taken in context of how they played the first part of that,
yeah,
month, it's a success.
I think 2-5 was on the table when they went out, yeah, for that wet. Like, I,
yeah, they people were ready to jump off.
They
the
could have really gone down the old toilet there, and they did steady the ship a little bit. Yeah.
Congratulations. So, yeah, there's been many criticisms of this Blue Jays offense, really all season long, but specifically here in September when runs have been so much at a premium. And many a smart baseball person has said what a lot of fanboys on Twitters, on the Twitters, have been saying for a couple of weeks. Oh, they're all about the home run. Too many big swings. Got to cut it down. Got to play a little more small ball. Well, Mr. Small Ball, they did just that in game 1 of this series against the Yankees. Took a 2-0 lead on the Troy Tulowitzki 2-run single with the bases loaded in the first, cashing in on a Billy Butler error. But in the second, first two runners reach for Devin Travis, this team's best hitter for the last month and a half, and John Gibbons asked him to bunt. He was able to get it down, advance the runners. Jays did score a run on a bases loaded walk, but then Jose Bautista hit it into a double play, and as the saying goes, you play for one run, that's all you'll get. Blue Jays did only get one run before breaking the game open later. But there's a couple of different interesting things about this to me, Jordan. One is that, and John Gibbons talked about it after the game, hey, I kind of hoped it didn't work, so it would shut you up. Is this team listening to outside pressures when it comes to creating offense?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, I think Gibby hears it and he talks about it because he's that kind of guy that'll joke around with the press and he's pretty laid back. But, you know, you look at the scenario yesterday that already put up two runs. And that's a time where I know it's the second inning, but you do see it as a way to get a little bit of a cushion and to give your starter something to work with. And I mean, after that start, if you go for the home run again and come away leaving two guys on base and get nothing out of it, that's pretty demoralizing to this team. And I don't think it's necessarily a matter of listening to outside pressure so much as it is wanting to make sure that your team comes away with something positive to build on as you go through this game. They're a team that's really looking to get their confidence back, and executing like that helps.
It also speaks to the aspect of the team we haven't touched on that has surprised people. They've pitched so well this year. I mean, yeah. I know Liriano's, you know, still no sure thing out there. But he's, you know, he looked good last night. And overall, yeah, you're sitting there going, well, if we get to three, the way things are going, our arms can probably get us through. So I don't think it's the end of the world. As Jordan said, probably nice to just feel a little step-by-step progress as opposed to going for the big bomb and, you know, coming away with a whiff and thinking, oh, you know, a little more, here we go again. So
it is interesting, though, because, and we talked about how it feels very different from 2015, and maybe 2015 was just a thing into itself, and it could never be reproduced. It was a once-in-a-lifetime moment for Blue Jays fans, the run they went on after acquiring Troy Tulowitzki and David Price. This is the first time this season they've really made a concerted effort with the bunt. That's Devin Travis's first, he said, career sacrifice bunt. Like, he never did it in the minor leagues either, because he's a guy who's been able to hit and advance runners that way. Here we are, there's 9 games left in the regular season. Now you're going to try out something entirely new?
Well, you know what's probably, speaking of last year, still stuck in their brain is, who did they lose to? That, you know,
Kansas
that singles-hitting
team
that just peppers you to death, right? So maybe having run up against that is...
But can you convert yourself into that team in 9 games before the playoffs?
You don't have to convert yourself into that team. It's just a matter of, you know, using all the weapons in your box, you know, and if you can do that, why wouldn't you try to take advantage of it and build a lead? And I mean, Devin Travis probably hasn't been asked to do that very much, if ever, in his career, because until he got here, Devin Travis was probably the best hitter on most of the teams that he's been on. I know the
Blue Jays. Well, he is here too.
He's the Blue Jays
best batting average on this team.
Well, I know that those guys, the big boppers for the Jays, have been in somewhat of a slump in September, but it's not egregious, I don't think, to ask a guy who's been hitting well to bunt when you have, as I think Gibbons said last night, when you look at the 2 through 7 who are up after him, like, it's not dumb to move guys along for those guys in any situation.
See, now, I don't want to get into a big philosophical discussion on the merits of bunting.
It's too early for
discussion. We don't have to go super sabermetric when we talk about bunting. But yeah, generally, I disagree with, you get 27 outs, don't give them away for free.
Yep.
If you can try to get a base hit, you should do that, especially with your best hitter. I will say, though, I buy into a little bit the idea of using the whole field and taking base hits the other way when they're available to you. And in game one of the series against the Yankees, it seemed like there was a concerted effort on that side of things, where Troy Tulowitzki a couple of times used the big part of the field. Josh Donaldson in the first inning, I know it ended up as a Billy Butler error, but he hit it hard to right. Couple of times this team has tried to poke a ball through the right side where maybe they wouldn't earlier this season, and certainly last year they didn't need to because the ball was going over the fence. And maybe that's something we can point to as a way to create offense when this Blue Jays offense has not been that great in September.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's no harm in trying to expand your repertoire. Like Jordan said, you're not going to change your DNA at this point in the season, or even just, you know, where this team is in terms of the identity of the current iteration of it. I mean, they are a slugging, swatting team. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with trying to get a few bleeders in there. And, you know, obviously when you get to the playoffs, a lot of times, that's what it comes down to, is being able to just reach out and poke one through the opposite side and, you know, get that one run that's going to put you over the top and hand it to the bullpen. So, yeah, I don't think just because they're a home run hitting team, you would expect to see Tulowitzki or whoever up there all the time trying to put it over the wall. Yeah, you've got to be malleable. You've got to be able to adapt.
Well, and also, it's a matter of making sure that you get the most out of the guys that you've got at the plate. And sometimes you're going to need them to try to go the other way. Sometimes you want them to swing for the fence, and sometimes you want to lay down a bunt. But it doesn't hurt, I guess, is what I'm saying, to give people who have seen these Blue Jays, basically this core lineup for a full year and more now, something else to think about. You know, that when opposing, there's a lot of film out there on the Blue Jays now. There's a lot of scouting out on this offense because they've been one of the most effective in baseball. So it doesn't hurt to have opposing pitchers looking at the blueprint and being like, well, they laid down a bunt last night and they went the opposite way three times. And, you know, we don't necessarily know exactly what they're going for, and they're going to be trying to put it over the left field fence every time.
We've been talking for 15 minutes. We haven't mentioned the Josh Donaldson high tops, the white high tops. Come on.
Pretty fly.
I'm trying to find out where to get them.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody. They look like basketball sneakers. They were something. And we know baseball is, I think, of all the major professional sports, the most. It's about routines. It's about superstitions. And I think when you're trying to break out of a slump, you'll do just about anything.
Shake it up.
And so far, so good for Josh Donaldson. The Blue Jays almost won a game without a home run, but Donaldson did hit one.
I'm waiting for the gold LeMay sneakers, like Russell Westbrook, the Russell Westbrook style high tops that are all gold and
sparkly.
How about
just like a full like boot that goes up to your knee? Maybe that's next.
That's after he sprains his ankle.
Yeah. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Annis alongside Jordan Heath Rawlings and Ryan Dixon. We are live from the World Cup of Hockey Fan Village in the Distillery District. Come say hi. Got a big picture window in front of us. We'll wave at you. We're in the hometown hockey truck. We'll get to the rest of the American League East and the American League and the wild card race coming up before the top of the hour. But Ken Rosenthal came up with his list of managers who are on the hot seat. And we mentioned that the Blue Jays seemingly changing offensive tracks here. I mean, it's just one game. But it is noteworthy, I think. The Blue Jays don't do this very often, the sacrifice bunt. That maybe John Gibbons is getting desperate, and desperate for offense, considering the lack of runs scored in September. He was on that list of managers on the hot seat, is what I'm getting to.
Yeah,
Ken Rosenthal
trying
put him
to arrive at the point.
Save his job.
Yeah.
Oh,
so what is it? Do you believe that, Ryan? And do you, where's the watermark for John Gibbons? Where does he have to get to if he is indeed on the hot seat?
Well, I mean, to some degree, you could argue he's got to win the World Series, right? I mean, getting to the World Series would be one step further than where they went last year.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's a magic formula out there. There are considerations like new regime since last year and since he was hired. Just expectations. Now it's been this will... I mean, even assuming they have to play a wild card game, this will be the second postseason in a row when they enter the playoffs really with a chance to win the World Series. And if you fall short a couple times, you know, that starts to build. And then it's also who else is out there. Maybe Shapiro has a preferred candidate.
Eric Wedge is already under his employ.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Whoever's in Cleveland.
So yeah, there's something to consider there. So there are definitely some factors swirling around, and if there isn't a parade in Toronto in late October or early November, then
you can't play if they're in the World Series. Come on, like he's getting fired next year.
He's going to lose Game 7 and pack his bag.
I'm saying win the World Series, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But no, it's funny because we talk about like, well, they could enter the playoffs with a real chance to win the World Series, and they had a real chance to win the World Series last year. And maybe if you don't get it done, you think about making a change. And we should just like pause and record scratch and rewind to 2 years ago when this team hadn't seen the playoffs
right.
in 20 some years. And now all of a sudden we're talking about like, well, they should hear. We're pretty much saying that they're probably going to make the playoffs for the second year in a row. And, you know, tell that to Toronto sports fans circa 2008. And that guy's mind is blown, you know. So that's obviously not all on John Gibbons. I think he's done a good job. But, you know, it's tough to let a guy go like that when he's had your biggest success in the last 2 years. But let's also, just to say something about John Gibbons, and maybe I'm wrong, I strongly doubt that he is the type of guy who would change his approach to save his own job. Like, he's too stubborn for that.
He's too baseball. I don't know. Old school.
People do lots of stuff to save their job. It is noteworthy that this team doesn't do what they did in Game 1 against the Yankees. They did it, and they're desperate for runs. It worked sort of kind of.
Well, let's see where they go with it from here. You know what I mean? Like, let's see if this becomes, now that it worked, if this becomes a part of their repertoire down the stretch here, or if all of a sudden we're just going back to swinging for the fences, and as they should.
I hope not. So Francisco Liriano picks up his second win as a Blue Jay as well, goes the six innings without giving up an earned run, six strikeouts as well. This guy's going to be in the rotation next season, but so far, I mean, he hasn't been the Francisco Liriano that was 200 strikeouts seemingly every season in the National League, but on occasion, he has looked dominant at times for the Blue Jays.
Well, when you look at it on a start-by-start basis, he's been a little inconsistent, and you can certainly see the control kind of coming and going, and Russell Martin's definitely helped with that compared to his National League numbers. But I think his ERA is down around 3.5 as a Blue Jay, which, you know, is basically a couple of ticks, just a couple of small ticks higher from where Jay Happ's has been all year. And we're talking about Jay Happ as one of the surprising Cy Young candidates. And I'm not saying that Liriano is that dominant or that good. And yes,
he has been before.
That he has been before. And there's been differences in how they look if you're actually watching the starts and seeing, you know, how they fluctuate up and down. Happ doesn't really fluctuate. He throws strikes. He does what he sets out to do. But
which is crazy to say again. But
which is, again, true. It is crazy to say. But Liriano has been, by the numbers in terms of earned runs allowed since he came to the Blue Jays, almost as good as arguably their best starter.
Yeah, he's been real, real good. And not that he's in this discussion, but I think it's an interesting one to have when it looks more and more like the Blue Jays are headed, if they're in the playoffs, and it's a tenuous lead, only a game and a half up on the Orioles, who are on the outside looking in, and the Orioles do have a game in hand, but they own a tiebreaker over the Orioles and the Tigers. But again, it's baseball. If they're all tied at the end of the season and a playoff spot is up for grabs, they will play one-game playoffs to get into one-game playoffs. But if it's the Jays and somebody, if it's the Jays and the Tigers or the Orioles, and they all finish, and two teams finish with the same record, the Blue Jays will have home field advantage in that wild card playoff game. But who starts that thing? Like, that's an interesting discussion, and especially considering the way the rotation sets up now for Aaron Sanchez to maybe start the final game of the regular season in Boston at Fenway Park in maybe a meaningful game. But if it's not, you can hold him back for that wild card game.
You hold him back. I mean,
is that the guy then you're starting in a one game playoff?
Yes.
I would have a hard time not putting Happ out there, I think, based on everything. I mean, just the body of work, the consistency this year, and also going back to last year with Pittsburgh. I mean, if you had a chance to put your guy out there who's just been Mr. Dependable for 6 months, I think you take your chances with that.
What about Mr. Big Game? He's like Big Game James Shield, except if Big Game James Shield has actually pitched well in big games. Marco Estrada, couple of times, the Blue Jays could not have been more desperate for wins in Game 3 of the American League Division Series and then Game 5 of the American League Championship Series to move it to a Game 6. He was so, so good. And on this road trip, needed a win so, so badly, and he had one of his best starts of the season, taking a no-hitter deep into that game. Does any of that weigh on you if you believe in pitching clutch?
I just think he's had a hard enough go prior to that start in Seattle, and I know he was fighting some back issues, I believe.
All season long.
So, I think if it's set up such that you were playing meaningful games and you had to burn those other guys, I think you'd still feel okay giving the ball to Estrada given what he did 12 months ago. But clearly he hasn't been quite close to the same guy. And yes, you worry that is health related and that he just can't quite, you know, it's just a little too volatile and there's a chance he's going to go out there and, you know, show you what he was showing you in early September.
And if he's not feeling good, then all of a sudden you're stuck going to your bullpen really early. And
it'd be all hands on deck in a one-game playoff anyways.
But also, here's the thing about the Blue Jays as they're constructed. Aaron Sanchez is your ace of the future. Yeah. Aaron Sanchez is the guy who, if he hadn't have been sort of jerked around and sent down and held up or whatever, would have a legitimate chance to win the Cy Young Award. He's the guy that is leading this team in ERA. You know, he's the dude who can go out there. And don't get me wrong, I love Jay Happ. He's turned in a fantastic season. He's been Mr. Dependable, which is fantastic and good value for the money. But Aaron Sanchez is the guy that can go out there and overpower a lineup.
Yeah, he can. And with all the hand-wringing and the skipping of starts and the trying to treat him with kid gloves, he's going to end up with 180 innings this season, yeah. Which is a whole lot. And it's not that much less than like the scary 200-inning mark. And Ross Atkins actually was on that West Coast trip and talked about Sanchez, and yes, John Gibbons and Sanchez have talked about, okay, all that's in the past. We're a five-man rotation and then playoffs, and you know, we're not worried about innings anymore. Ross Atkins didn't exactly say that. He hedged his bets a little bit. Can you imagine if we're looking at the Blue Jays being careful with Aaron Sanchez in playoff games, if they win a one-game playoff?
Yeah, no, not going to happen.
No way.
But also look at, okay, just take the Blue Jays rotation as currently constructed, because I think basically everybody except R.A. Dickey is coming back. Who starts opening day next season? It's Aaron Sanchez, right?
It might be J-Hap. And I think you might lean to the guy who's a veteran who, you know, who is not an all-star, but you'd reward him with an outstanding season, 20-game winner, all that.
Sanchez has the best stuff. He throws the hardest. He misses the most bats.
That's the deciding factor. He throws the hardest.
He misses more bats. He can get tough hitters to look foolish more than maybe anybody except Estrada when that changeup is really working.
It does seem more and more like if the Blue Jays are in the playoffs, it's going to be in a one-game playoff and wild-card game. And that shouldn't – I mean, it should freak you out. But
just to be clear, you should be freaking out.
You should be freaked out. You
should hide under your bed right now until it's all over.
I hope you're not startled by that news in your car. Just pull off to the side of the road. But, yeah, it'll be exciting, though. It's thrown right into that Game 5 that the Blue Jays won against the Texas Rangers. It's Game 7. It's winner-take-all. And you know what? Teams have gone deep from that position. A couple of years ago, the Kansas City Royals were a wild card team. They were down 4 runs in the 8th inning to the Oakland A's, and they ended up in the World Series.
And
right?
Why not, right? It happens all the time. You got a win under your belt, you start feeling good, you go into the next series, and baseball happens quickly. Like, that's the thing, right? It's not like
playoff games are long, though.
Once they start, they go on forever. Unlike the NHL or the NBA or whatever, there's no day off to ruminate and to figure out what went wrong
or whatever.
You
can do a 180 in 3 days, right? Yeah. You can go from, oh, my God, we got to play a playoff game to we're up to nothing in a best-of-five
right.
series.
And so
right?
once it's you like, start that rhythm going, I mean, you see it happening with the Red Sox right now, right? As they started mashing, the pitching started working at the right time, and now they're unbeatable. And you, if you get into that one-game playoff and you're at home in front of your crowd and you can manage to, you know, mash that out 8-2, and all of a sudden you're going on the road with all the confidence in the world, and here we go.
I do think with the Jays, just to zoom out, it is worth just pointing out, you know, this team could still do serious damage. Yeah. I mean, they have a little bit of that vibe where, you know, the pitching's been better than expected, but, you know, a lot of times, and obviously this is not going to play well to the hard numbers crowd, but across all sports, you get those teams that their first crack at it, when they look really good, something doesn't quite come together, but then they come back for another chance at it and a reset. And, you know, look at Kansas City, I guess. I mean, they went to the World Series, almost won it, and came all the way back and did win it. Like, it is worth remembering that through all this hand-wringing and the offense isn't quite, like, no team out there is circling the Blue Jays going, oh, you know, let's play that team. I think there's a little bit of a sense of, you know, if the storm comes together, then they're, you know, they're still going to be a really tough team to beat.
If the pitching is what it's been all season, give or take, and the bats really wake up, they could beat any team in baseball. And I'm not saying that here, I'm sitting here calling that they will do that.
But they have that capability. That's right.
They absolutely can batter any starting pitcher still.
And maybe that's because only, well, you know, sort of four teams ultimately get in and play baseball series. I mean, obviously you've got the cream of the crop, so maybe you could say that about every team, but I feel like there are, you know,
each October you look at a couple and go, well, realistically, could you see that team going through? And
I think a lot of them reside in the National
League.
Yeah,
that's right. And the Jays are not one of those teams. You would look at them if they got into the round where you're the division series.
The Red Sox have been amazing over the last month, and their starting pitching has improved immeasurably. Do you think David Price is sitting at home being like, I want to pitch to that lineup?
Yeah, not a chance. No.
And especially considering his playoff numbers. Speaking of the Red Sox, a nice segue there, Jordan. We will talk about Boston's 9-game winning streak, running away with the division, their magic number at 4, and will handicap this wild card race because, as mentioned, the Blue Jays just with a 1.5-game lead on a playoff spot. The Tigers right there. Tigers, Blue Jays, 1-game playoff could be pretty cool as well. That's coming up next. Ben Ennis alongside Ryan Dixon and Jordan Heath Rawlings at Sportsnet Magazine live from the World Cup of Hockey Fan Village in the Distillery District in the hometown hockey truck. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fans know that Sportsnet.ca has them covered with news, analysis, highlights, and storytelling. But the lineup also includes podcasts. Here's a taste of At the Letters, our Blue Jays podcast. From two guys who speak fluent Gibby.
Somebody asked me, and I hadn't seen it yet. Somebody told me he was handing some out. No, but they didn't give me one, you know.
It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
If you're getting the postseason, the Toronto Blue Jays, you're getting a wild card game. That's kind of what you're hoping for right now.
Wait.
It's an opportunity to go into a 1-game playoff where that 1 game will decide your season. This is it. This is the thing. What should Blue Jays fans be bracing themselves for, Ben?
I think craziness. Not quite on the level of the National League where you might have a 3-team wild card tiebreaker, but utter craziness and probably a ton of ups and downs emotionally in the course of, 48 hours. It would be nuts. And that seems to be where they're headed, and potentially against the Orioles, which would make things even more interesting.
The way it's setting up right now, which is like the most amazing thing ever, is it's going to be Toronto and Baltimore in the wild card. Toronto playing for the right to get an ALDS rematch against the Texas Rangers.
Crazy.
Narratively, that is delicious.
Yeah.
That is wonderful.
Oh, yeah. I can already see the teasers on Sportsnet and on the American networks with the bat flip and the punch and everything else.
Go to Sportsnet.ca and click on the Podcast Central logo for the scoop on At the Letters and all our shows, as well as links to listen and subscribe. Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Happy weekend. It is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis, Jordan Heath Rawlings, and Ryan Dixon. We are live from the World Cup of Hockey Fan Village at the Distillery District. We are in the hometown hockey truck, World Cup of Hockey semifinal weekend cranking up Saturday, 7:00 on Sportsnet Rogers Game Center Live. It is Canada, it is Russia, and then the second semifinal going on Sunday, Sweden against Team Europe at 1:00. We'll get to that after the top of the next hour. But, gents, let's continue our baseball discussion. And, yes, it does seem more and more like the Blue Jays are headed for a 1-game playoff. That's if they're in the playoffs, which is no sure thing here, headed into the final 9 games of the regular season, considering they're 1.5 up on the Orioles, who are on the outside looking in. But the reason why they're concentrating almost entirely on the 1-game wildcard playoff game is because the Red Sox refuse to lose. They swept the Yankees in a 4-game series. They swept the Orioles in a 4-game series. They won game one against the Rays. That's, by my quick math, 9 straight wins.
Good job.
Thank you. They now lead the Blue Jays by 5.5 games. Their magic number to clinch the division is 4. They look like a powerhouse. But, Ryan, does this mean that they're shoo-ins to win the World Series?
That's how it works, right?
Yeah.
You know what? Their pitching has gotten so much better from the beginning of the year, both the starters and the relievers, and I'm sure a lot of Jays fans were keeping tabs on Price and know that he scuffled through the first couple months there, and his numbers are way better. I definitely think the gains they made in the bullpen are legit and that the bullpen is 10 times what it was earlier because their other big acquisition in the offseason was closer Craig Kimbrell. He was kind of wobbly early on, had knee surgery, and is now back to firing darts. And Koji Uehara, who was amazing for them.
He's 1,000 years old.
He is, and it, you know, he's like Estrada. He just goes up there and throws 86, and apparently that's good enough to get it done. But, yeah, so he was on the DL. Now he's back and throwing, giving them the eighth inning that they'd been hoping for. So that seems to have really come together. I do wonder about the starting pitching still. Again, to bring it back to David Price, I know lots of Toronto fans remember how his playoff games went, and historically, obviously, not Mr. October.
Maybe if Jose Bautista and Ryan Goins didn't get their signals crossed in Kansas City, that
and then that's right, fair enough. But yeah, you look at Rick Porcello, who's having an amazing year. I mean, I think they know what they're going to get out of him, but it gets a little interesting after that. So I still think the starting pitching could be an issue for the Sox. But other than that, yeah, they are in cruise control. I mean, that lineup has a little bit of everything.
And they have, you know, that whole special September sayonara David Ortiz, you know, this is it for this generation almost of Red Sox, because this is really the season where you pass that torch from,
they have the pixie dust.
Yeah, you pass that torch from Ortiz to Mookie Betts.
Pedroia.
Yeah, pass it to Pedroia. Please leave Dustin Pedroia out of this. But you know what I mean? Like the Red Sox are built with another core that's already here.
Oh, yeah.
And this is that. And the great teams, you know, in any sport that continue through it, I'm thinking here, you know, the Patriots and teams like that, the San Antonio Spurs, tend to have those seasons where they still have that great, iconic player, and they also have the next generation of players, and there's a very small overlap, and those seasons are special. Like, they're special to watch, and as much as, you know, I'm sure everybody in Toronto right now doesn't want to hear it, it feels like that's what's going on with the Red Sox.
I will say, just like when a team in the NFL scores too early, leaves the other team too much time on the clock, they're getting hot a little too early because there's still 9 games to go in the regular
season. They cool off.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a long, long hot streak to win a World Series.
Yes.
But you got to be hot for just about a month, all of October to win one.
Well, hey, I mean, they had to do... This is what it's taking to pull away with the division. If they had gone, you know, 5-4 in their past 9 instead of 9-0, they'd still be life and death and worried about a wild card. So, I guess if you're a Sox backer, you'll take maybe they're peaking too early in exchange for they're going to win the division.
Yeah, there's no question about that. All right, so let's look at the race the Blue Jays are really in. Although, I mean, hey, we've seen collapses of the kind that would take the Red Sox
by Boston.
Yes.
Cost Terry Francona his job.
Yeah.
But the fried chicken was great.
Yeah, it was. And the lasting image will be Carl Crawford taking a fly ball in the man region in left field in Baltimore.
And it's possible. I mean, they do have the last 3 games of the season against the Blue Jays.
I think that would be amazing if those games meant anything at this point.
Yeah, I think that's all. Yeah.
It would be a whole lot of fun. But yeah, magic number of 4 with 9 games to go.
Don't hold your breath.
No. All right, so the Blue Jays game up on the Tigers for that first wild card spot in the American League. As mentioned, the Blue Jays hold the tiebreaker over both the Tigers and the Orioles. The Orioles can actually get it back if they sweep that 3-game series at Rogers Center, but that's the only way they can get it back.
If they sweep that 3-game series, the Blue Jays have bigger problems than a tiebreaker.
Certainly. But right now, it's the Blue Jays in that first wild card spot, the Tigers a game back of them. The Orioles a game and a half back of the Jays, but a half game back of the Tigers. Mariners still in it. They're only 2 games back of a playoff spot. And the Astros, boy, they blew a heartbreaker on Friday night, up 2 runs in the 9th, lost to the Angels. They're 2.5 games back. I think we can pretty much put a fork in the Yankees. They're 4 back at this point, especially the way they played recently, losing the 4 straight to the Red Sox, losing game 1 against the Blue Jays.
If they lose tonight, they're pretty much done.
That would be a tough one for them. Who's the best matchup for the Blue Jays? Because, I mean, anything can happen in one game, but we can handicap it. I think you'd look at the team with the best one starting pitcher, like the best ace, and is that the Tigers?
But it's going to come down to the wire in this race, right? And you can't even look at that now and say that the Tigers or the Blue Jays or the Orioles will be able to save their best starter for that game. Like, you just don't know. And especially when you look at, there's five teams that could still be in this race and end up with this spot. So nobody is looking at that wild card game being like, all right, we got to plan out our rotation so we can have pitcher X here. There, you got to take what you got.
I will say, though, that the Blue Jays, as much as, yeah, sure, you want Aaron Sanchez or maybe it's Jay Happ to start that game, they're a little more interchangeable, the four starters that the Blue Jays will have in the playoffs, as opposed to maybe the Tigers, and they've got Verlander. Fulmer's been good, but yeah, especially if
there's
the Orioles are in it.
Yeah,
the
Orioles are the boomer bust team, right? Like, you're looking at that team going, well, they got so many guys who can crush dingers. Who knows? Maybe they just have an afternoon, but they feel like the flimsiest team, right?
They're gettable, especially in the mid to late innings of
games. But I've been saying that for a month and a half.
Yeah, they won't go away. Showalter, he knows what he's doing.
Apparently, yeah. They just refuse to fall out of it.
And they can hit, I mean, they can hit bombs. That's the one fear with that team is that,
they can put you out of your misery early.
Yeah, they could.
But that said, I mean, they're also one of those teams that is incredibly vulnerable to being put out of their misery early because some of their starters can't get out of the fourth inning.
Yeah.
If the Mariners could pull it off and end up in a playoff position, maybe they have the best starter for a one-game playoff in Felix Hernandez. I mean, Verlander's been good. Blue Jays, I think, and I'd have to go through the numbers, I think the Blue Jays have some pretty good numbers historically against Verlander. Of course, he threw the no-hitter at Rogers Center, but in Detroit a couple of years ago, they got to him.
Savvy team there, too, right? I mean, the Tigers have been there before, postseason a lot.
And that offense is scary. They can put some runs on the board with Miggy Cabrera, Victor Martinez, Ian Kinsler. Yeah, it's... And again,
are we glossing over Toronto, Detroit? Like, that's that feels like from a bygone era.
I almost wish that would, and I mean, it still could happen. I almost wish that if that is the wild card matchup, it's in Detroit.
Yeah,
and you see a lot of Blue Jays fans, just like they made the pilgrimage to Seattle. A little easier to drive the 3 hours down the 401 to Comerica. And as good as the Tigers have been in the last 10 years, you can still generally get tickets for those playoff games. By the way, I had tickets to Game 5 of the World Series in Detroit. Tigers and Giants.
Oh, when they got... There
was no Game 5. So that was my one chance to make it to a World Series game. But yeah, so much to decide.
I don't want to see the Tigers and Blue Jays because that brings back all sorts of traumatic childhood memories for me. It'll be 29 years from... I was thinking for a second, is it 30 years? Oh, God,
almost.
I'm getting old, but yeah, that's what I don't want to see.
And the Blue Jays are going to need that kind of 87 collapse for the Red Sox if they want to win the division. But yeah, you want to talk about examples, that is one of them. When we come back, we're at the World Cup of Hockey Fan Festival, so why don't we talk about the World Cup of Hockey? Team Canada against Team Russia in the semifinal, 7 o'clock on Saturday night on Sportsnet and Rogers Game Center Live. Are we getting ahead of ourselves, or is Canada like the American dream team in basketball in which they run absolutely roughshod over every team in international competitions, and is that good for the sport as a whole? That's coming up next. Ben Annis, Jordan Heath-Rawlings, Ryan Dixon, Sportsnet Magazine Live. We are live from the World Cup of Hockey Fan Village in the Distillery District, and we are in the hometown hockey truck. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. The top topics. The headiest headlines. The debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey there, this is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis, alongside Jordan Heath-Rawlings and Ryan Dixon. We are live from the World Cup of Hockey Fan Village at the Distillery District. If you're coming down, come say hi. We are in the hometown hockey truck. Final day, I believe, down here at the Distillery District. World Cup of Hockey into the short strokes. Final four, first semifinal going Saturday night, Team Canada against Team Russia, a little traditional rivalry, and then the second semifinal on Sunday, seeing Team Sweden against Team Europe. That's a 1 o'clock start on Sportsnet and Rogers Game Center Live. So it's easy, it's really, really easy to get all into that you know, whatever is hot right now is the reality. Whatever people are talking about, that's always been the case. Recency bias is what they call it. But this is, it's now becoming a thing that people believe Team Canada is unbeatable at international events. And certainly they won.
Well, when's the last time they were beat?
Right. I mean, there is that. They went through the round robin portion of this tournament at a perfect 3-0. You look at the depth of that roster. You look at the players that aren't on that roster and how many players could form a team that would rival this Canadian team that is at the World Cup of Hockey. Are we at that point, Jordan, where it's a display of Canada's hockey supremacy, these international events? It's not really a competition anymore.
Well, I don't think we're quite at that point. I mean, certainly Canada's been dominant lately, and the current generation of Canadian players have all sort of entered that their collective prime, and right now is the best time in recent memory to be a Canadian hockey fan. But, you know, you look at Team North America, and yeah, Connor McDavid's on there and several outstanding young Canadians, but there's a whole generation of American hockey players on that team that should bolster the U.S. cause. And you know, I think as much of it, and you guys can dispute this if you want, I think a lot of it has to do not so much with the fact that Canada is so dominant in terms of the talent that no other country can match them. I think Canada has the best management and coaching team of any country in the world, possibly the best hockey coach on Earth.
Not better than John Tortorella.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the difference, right? Like, I don't know the answer to this, but I would love to see how those two respective teams would have done if you made John Tortorella coach Canada and Mike Babcock coach the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, I think Canada too, shout out to Sam Cosentino and a plug for the Tape to Tape podcast, because he was saying this yesterday on our pod. Like, Canada just has the template and the whole, beyond just like the X's and O's, like everything is just plug and play, and all the players know what to expect, and they do, it sounds so corny, but they do show up so just ready to do whatever and accept whatever role because they're so over the moon to play for Canada. Whereas Sam was saying, you know, even when the U.S. really closes the talent gap, which is coming, they're still going to have to get over that hurdle because it doesn't quite feel the same there, where it's just like, you know, of course guys are amped up to beat Canada and are super proud of playing for USA Hockey, but I don't know if they have quite the same thing going where, like, every single guy is like, if I don't see the power play, I don't care. And I think there's still a gap to bridge there a little bit.
I think Phil Kessel would have loved to have been here.
Well, yeah. I mean,
but that's the kind of sniping that you see, and I don't mean sniping as in the kind that could
right,
have used from
that
Phil
we didn't
Kessel
see.
That we didn't see.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of internecine bickering
sure.
that you don't see from Canada.
No.
You know, Sidney Crosby will play on the fourth line for this team, and won't bat an eyelash.
Mm. Well, he won't.
He won't.
But he would.
But yes, yes,
he
we
would.
Understand.
Yeah,
he would.
No, they never. But if you asked him to, he would. And also, he's also very, very composed. So I doubt he bats his eyelashes.
I'm looking at the front page of Sportsnet.ca, and I see this story by this guy Ryan Dixon. International hockey scene better off when Russia's a player. So that leads to the next question: is this a bad thing for the game as a whole? If what we're saying is correct, if it is the dream team when it comes to USA basketball, that Team Canada is expected to win everything. They're heavy favorites, and in fact, they do win just about everything. And it's a massive surprise when anyone beats them, even if it is in a round-robin game. Is that good for the growth of the game? Is it good for the entertainment value of these international tournaments, whether it's the World Cup or the Olympic Games?
I do think on one hand, the high bar really does motivate other countries. And, you know, other federations have done a lot to improve where they're going. I mean, you know, we're glossing over Sweden a little bit, but Sweden's blue line is probably better than Canada's. I mean, they have some unbelievable players there. And Finland, you know, they had a ghastly tournament, but man, they are coming. They obviously just had two high picks in this draft, and there's a few more coming. So I do think the high bar really gets people pushing themselves, and that's good. But yeah, for the sake of drama, I mean, if the NHL and NHLPA wasn't sitting here going, well, obviously this tournament is Canada. You know, they want, in a perfect world, you would have Canada or the U.S. in the final. But if you remove those considerations, would it be better to have Russia in there? Yeah, I think so. I mean, and in terms of the Russians, I mean, I think you have to look at it like the NHL 10 years ago. I mean, how much better off are we? How much more fun is the NHL because classic teams like the Chicago Blackhawks and Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup? Like, I think it would be the international equivalent of that to have Russia back and capable of winning, beating Canada and winning a big tournament.
Yeah, well, we've talked for the last couple days since this matchup was set about, like, oh, you know, it's a revitalization of Canada-Russia rivalry, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, there's kind of that, it doesn't feel like it used to when it felt like life or death to beat the Russians, because they're right there with us and we're battling for hockey supremacy. I think, theoretically at least, it feels like Canada could lose this and it would be okay because we'll come back crush them at the Olympics or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So in that sense, it would be good. But to bring it back to, is Canada too dominant? I mean, so they might, let's say they lose today to the Russians. And, you know, we say, well, how did that happen? And we go, well, they don't have Connor McDavid, who might be the best player in the world already. And even if he's not, even if you leave him to Team North America because everybody else lost their young players, they still don't have arguably the third or fourth best forwards in the world in Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. Like,
yeah, and not just that. I mean, if they lose to the Russians, anything can happen in one game. When you're talking about hockey, that it hasn't happened, though, for this team.
No, I keep, you know what, Ben, it's funny you say that, because for all the time leading up to this tournament and in the early stages, I kept saying the main consideration when you're handicapping this tournament isn't who's got the best team, it's the format. It's that anything can happen. But Canada's kind of doing its best to undo that. You know?
Like, system. It's
maybe
that system.
Maybe the top consideration is Canada's just crazy good, and it's just how maniacal all those players are. Like, just, you know, all-consuming, whatever the task is, they are, you know, they're all the way in. And I mean, you watch Russia and I mean, yes, they're in the semifinal and that's great, but you know, I've watched all their games live and I think they've been outshot every time. They blocked a ton of shots against the Finns. Yeah, they can exploit a crack. They can make you pay for a mistake, but you know, I don't think I've watched a 5-minute stretch from Russia where I've been like, whoa, you know, these guys can really roll. Like, you watch Canada and it's just wave after wave.
And they haven't even, and this is like, and maybe it happens today and it would be exciting to see, they haven't been put into that corner where they have to turn it on and open it up, right?
Sure.
They've been controlling, don't get me wrong, they've been controlling the possession and dominating that aspect, but what happens if they fall behind by a couple of goals and Babcock has to say, like, all right, guys, let's now take some risks and really see what this offense can do? Because that, to me, is just, that's the one aspect of their game we haven't seen, when they have to play risky.
And that's where the matchup gets real tough for Russia, because their blue line is not pretty. I mean, we're sitting here to some degree trying to talk ourselves into a game for the sake of drama, but I mean, would anyone be surprised if Canada just came out and rocked them 5-1? I mean, you wouldn't, right?
It'd be the 2010 Olympics all over again, right? What was the quote from then? A big angry gorilla coming out of its cage or something?
Yeah.
What did Ovechkin say?
It's funny, just thinking back on it, I guess that was essentially...
That was the beginning of
that
this.
That was the flip of the switch a little bit for this generation, because they were wobbling and they beat Switzerland in the shootout, maybe? Or
yeah,
tied
but it could have gone either way.
Yeah,
it was in overtime, I think.
And then it was like, oh, how, you know, what's going to happen in the quarterfinal against the Russians? And they just shellacked them. I mean, they
haven't lost since then.
But, you know, people should remember, yes, Sochi was, I mean, top to bottom, unbelievable dominance. Vancouver was wobbly. I mean,
gold medal game went to overtime.
The game before, they almost gagged it up against Slovakia. Like, that wasn't a, you know, oh yeah, just put your feet up and watch them storm to the goal. That was a get your fingernails in your mouth, because this is intense. Whereas Sochi was just like, well, this seems perfect, you know? Like,
well, it speaks to the recency bias, right?
Sure,
because there
that's
is
right.
this understanding that, or this feeling maybe that they win every game 8-1, that they don't lose a game. Well, they haven't lost a game, but yet not all of them are like game one against the Czech Republic.
That's
right.
That
they played some tight games.
But they don't. This is kind of what you're saying when you talk about those 1-0 games that don't feel like that they could have been 5-0. You know, that this is a team that is so comfortable in those games.
Yes.
And so comfortable in those pressure-packed situations where you would see a team like a North America or a Russia, you know, be a little nervous with that, knowing that they're playing in a winner-take-all tournament and one bad bounce could swing it. And nothing seems to panic Canada. And
yeah.
That's when I go back to saying, well, it's a function of the management and coaching because they all know their roles so well, they don't have to panic. And they all trust the people next to them because why wouldn't you? They all know their roles and they're all stars.
The one thing I will say that's I'm disappointed about when it comes to the World Cup of Hockey is that we don't get to see Team North America play Team Canada. That was the matchup me and I think just about everybody else wanted to see. I still believe that the day after the final game of the finals played, we should see an exhibition game. Can't we just get them together, have them play at the Air Canada Centre? You could sell it out.
3-on-3.
Right. It would be amazing.
Let's make that the All-Star game this year. We seem to do something different with the All-Star game every year, so why not do that?
Well, let's talk about gimmicks for a second because...
Gimmicks are great. I'm on record.
Yeah, well, Team North America, I think, was pretty much an unqualified success.
Team Europe's pretty good, too.
Team Europe is through to the semifinals. I've heard a suggestion that maybe the next time the World Cup rolls along, why don't you just have the defending Stanley Cup champs as a team in this event, which might be interesting as
I'm
well.
I'm sure the defending Stanley Cup champs would love that, by
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
We just finished playing a month ago.
Yeah. What do we make of the new gimmick teams, and what do we think is going to happen the next time this thing rolls around? Will there be a Team North America? Because the Americans certainly hope there won't be.
I think it's a one and done. That seems to be the sense out there. And to some degree, I kind of like that. You know, it was this out of the blue thing. All absolute full disclosure, I was not on board initially. And to be honest, I do feel like all these discussions go, oh, it was so fun, oh, it was amazing, oh, it was crazy, but I kind of feel like it should be 8 different countries, you know? Like, maybe we're still too fixated on that, but, you know, I do think when the World Cup happens again, presumably in 4 years, it's going to be Switzerland and Slovakia, and the notion that those teams can't compete is not accurate. I mean, there are very close games between those teams and other countries. It'll give them 4 more years to develop. But yeah, I mean, it was a complete smashing success. And I will say the one thing is, you know, these guys had to be the guinea pigs a little bit, the guys on the team this year. Whereas now that there's a precedent, you're going to see guys who are 20 being like, I want to play on that team because... Yeah.
So,
you know, super fun.
Here's the thing about the gimmicks. First of all, like I said, I love gimmicks in sports. I think that, you know, we're all trying to have a good time and enjoy it anyway. So if we come up with something that works, that's fantastic. The real plus for me, aside from watching Team North America, which was great, is that it opened the door. It normalized the idea of, yeah, we can create fun teams that we want to see play. So I spent, while we were watching North America this week with a couple of friends, we spent, you know, a good 10 or 15 minutes talking about, like, well, what kind of other teams could you make? Because the door has been opened now. So here, what about Team UFA? You take all the guys that don't have contracts yet, that haven't been able to get a job, and you throw them on a team and let them prove themselves against the best in the world. Or you can do a Canada B now. You know, like, the doors have been opened. Team UFA, watch for it.
Team UFA. So I mean, it's we're
Chris
training
Russell
camp
versus the world.
Right. I was gonna say, like, training camp cranks up real soon.
Somebody needs a job. They got to play for a job.
They'll be highly motivated.
That's exactly right. That's
not
the,
to get
that's
hurt.
The concept.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, they'll be highly motivated to impress.
Can you imagine if they beat
Team USA?
They're
probably not that good.
Can you imagine? Well,
else they'd have a job.
Oh, let's expand it to just team free agent then, so you get the RFAs too.
Okay.
So you get Johnny Gaudreau and guys like
ooh,
that.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, that's a scary. Yeah, the insurance alone would cost a pretty penny, I think.
I'm not
dudes.
Saying that that is necessarily the way you go, but my point
I like
is more
Stanley
just
Cup
like
champs.
The Stanley Cup champs would be fun. You know, we've always
how about
talked
all
about
right-handed shots?
Yeah, led by PK Subban, or not PK Subban? Sorry, but like we've always had these ideas of what about a team from Quebec?
Yeah.
Or what about doing 3 regional Canadian teams?
I like that idea. That sounds cool.
But
and then
you
get the rivalries inside Canada. You know,
sure.
you'd get everybody flying the flag, the Ontario flag against
yeah.
the players from Quebec and
oh God, there
the
would
Alberta
be brawls
teams.
In Canada House. Yeah. It would be
well,
amazing.
What would you do? You do Western Canada, Ontario, I guess, could have his own team,
and
then you do
Canada,
Quebec and yeah,
Quebec and the Maritimes.
And the Maritimes.
Yeah, which would be and my point is that the biggest stumbling block to any of that kind of stuff happening has always been like, Well, no, it's a tournament for countries, and that's over now.
The door's been kicked in.
Yes.
Here come the UFAs.
Mark my words.
Not sold on that one. Oh. It's at Sportsnet Magazine Live, Ben Annis alongside Jordan Heath Rawlings and Ryan Dixon. We are live from the World Cup of Hockey Fan Village in the Distillery District. We're in the hometown hockey truck. So let's look ahead to the second semifinal on Sunday, Team Sweden against Team Europe. And boy, Ralf Kruger is like just a great executive. Doesn't matter, soccer, hockey. Like he's
most interesting man in sports.
He really is. Like, I can't wait for that movie, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty incredible. That Team Europe, though, they started off with the shocking win over the Americans. Maybe that shouldn't be as shocking in hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
But they're playing a Sweden team that I think you want to talk about the Russians maybe not having the depth of defense. The Swedes certainly have that. That
Swedes
seems
have
like
all the defensemen in the world.
And that would set up, if you're projecting a little bit, and again, anything can happen in one game, it looks like we're setting up for a Sweden-Canada final, does it not?
Yeah, I would think so. And, I mean, anything can happen, but that would be fun. I mean, that's an underrated, it's not really a rivalry because both teams are so
nice. You can't dislike Sweden.
Yeah, because you can't dislike Sweden. Everybody's
Sweden,
so nice
Finland
and respectable.
Sweden-Finland is a rivalry.
Sweden-Finland is a rivalry. Canada-America is a rivalry, but Canada Sweden is just kind of like
UFA
gentlemen.
Against everybody.
Let us play a nice game of hockey and may the best team win kind of thing. But that's also a great way to end a World Cup when you have arguably the two best, most talented, deepest rosters in the thing going head to head.
Yeah. It seems like that would be the preferred ending. Though I have to say, number one, I was never all in on this Team Europe is going to be bunk talk. I mean, you look at that lineup. Another shout out, Sportsnet's Garrett Joyce. He was saying when we were down there, what other team has a number one center, number one defenseman combo as good as Anze Kopitar and Roman Josi? And the answer is Canada. That's it. Sweden doesn't have a center like Anze Kopitar. Yeah. They have the defenseman, but they don't have that combo. So, I mean, you've got two serious pillars there. And you got Yaroslav Halak, who, if you're trying to beat him from the waist down, it's tough. Like, he gets into that Dominic Hasek mode where along the ice, you can't get it by them. And, yeah, they have a mix, too. I mean, that's the thing. You look at Russia, and there's some great players, but there's, you know, there isn't quite as good a balance as, you know, Europe has. I mean, anytime you got Murray and Hossa, your team qualifies as diverse right there. You got, a sniper in Zuccarello. Maybe sniper's a strong, but,
Tommy
he's a guy who can,
out there who
yeah,
can
you got guys
a
you can
bit.
You got guys you can bury. You got guys you can go play both ways strong, and you've got a defense that starts with Roman Josi and still has, big old Zdeno Chara back there. Like, I never bought that they were going to be some pushover, and I still don't.
Team North America did skate circles around them, though, in the pre-tournament.
I think that's what freaked everybody out. Yeah, I don't think Team Europe had figured out what they were doing at that point as well. Like, yeah.
And Team North America played on pure adrenaline and pure youth and speed, so you can kind of throw them to the wolves off the bat, and they're just going to do what they do, right? Whereas Europe took a little bit longer to find an identity and get into that. But, I think it's interesting because Sweden is a fantastic hockey country. We were talking earlier about the Red Sox and teams that have sort of one generation passing the torch to another generation. And Sweden has that in a lot of places, but maybe not at forward. The Swedish generation that belonged to the Daniel Alfredsson, Henrik Zetterberg, back to Matt the Sedins and Matt Sundin, that generation is almost gone. And that's not to say there's no talented Swede forwards, but there's no real next class of game-breaking offensive players for them.
That's true, actually. They're great on the blue line, but not quite the same up front.
Back to Team Europe for just a second, and I'm hung up on Ralf Kruger. He's got to end up back in the NHL at some point, right? Like, what this is this? Are people buying what he's selling here? The success he's had. I don't know if he wants to leave Southampton though.
His NHL memory will last a long time for a lot of people, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, you would like to see him get a better shake than he got with an Edmonton team that feels like it could ruin just about any coach.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I definitely think he's, probably started some conversations, and who knows what kind of line of work exactly he wants to be in full time, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some doors opening.
But it seems like he's got a pretty nice gig where he is right now, Like, why would he necessarily need to come back to the NHL unless it's his dream?
Yeah, it doesn't need to.
Yeah, again, I can't wait for that that movie to come out because it's been
International Man of Sporting Mystery.
Yeah, he absolutely is. When we come back, we are underway week three of the NFL season, and the New England Patriots a perfect 3-0, and they have yet to see Tom Brady take a snap, and he won't next week either. But they're playing the Buffalo Bills, so it doesn't matter.
Nice time to be a Boston fan.
Yeah, it is real nice. And Jacoby Brissett, he's the third-string quarterback, and now he's out. Had thumb surgery. We'll talk about the Patriots. We'll talk about those hapless Buffalo Bills and plenty more NFL when we come back. Ben Ennis alongside Jordan Heath-Rawlings, Ryan Dixon at Sportsnet Magazine Live. We are live from the World Cup of Hockey Fan Village in the Distillery District. We're in the hometown hockey truck. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Christina Rutherford.
Kevin Pillar does things other people wouldn't do. We know this because we've watched him lay out for line drives with zero regard for his safety.
Adrian Beltre swings the first pitch and loops one to shallow center. Pillar with a great diving catch! Come on! He does it again! Dives, and the ball nestles beautifully in the web of that gold glove.
But did you know the Blue Jays center fielder started riding motorcycles at age 3? Did you know he once asked a friend to rifle slap shots at him in their backyard in college just for kicks? He was wearing catcher's gear, and it was a tennis ball instead of a puck. But still, as for that reckless abandon we see on the field, Pillar's childhood best friend, David Fair, says that's always been his buddy's game. Here's Fair's favorite memory of a Pillar catch.
Like, he runs up the hill, 8 feet, scales the fence, catches it, he does like a little pirouette in one thing, lands on his feet, and then like somersaults down the hill at 13 years old, and we're like, what the hell was that? Like, and he won the game.
Pillar says that's just another day at the office. He also points out that he's wired a little differently. Yeah, Kevin, we've noticed.
Kevin Pillar does it again and again and again.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine. Available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet Magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones. Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, Jordan Heath-Rawlings, and Ryan Dixon, who just had a coughing fit. He's okay, though. We are live from the World Cup of Hockey Fan Village in the Distillery District. We're in the hometown hockey truck. We got a great view of the stage in which we're watching, like, the World Cup stacking championships or something.
The 10-and-under World Cup of
quick
cup
hands,
stacking.
Quick hands.
Yeah. It doesn't, you're right, you said, well, it doesn't look real. Looks like it's, like, in fast motion.
Oh, that kid was getting in the zone. He is in it.
A lot of sugar, I think, these kids are having before they participate in this thing. So come down, check that out. Come watch us do our thing as we've got about 20 more minutes to go here in this fine program. Let's talk a little NFL, shall we?
Oh, yes.
And we're into week three of the NFL season, and there's plenty of storylines to go around. I think prime among them, though, is what the New England Patriots have done without Tom Brady. Still another game to go, but they're a perfect 3-0. Jimmy Garoppolo, couple of games. He gets hurt, down to Jacoby Brissett. Now he's hurt. Who knows who gets the start in game four, if there's enough time for Garoppolo to get healthy to start that game, or they sign somebody off the street. But it is unbelievable against the Texans team that was 2-0, but they just hammered them, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, that Texans team does not have a bad defense at all. They got, you know, carved up is a little much by Jacoby Brissett.
27-0 is carved up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, they got carved up, but Jacoby Brissett did not really carve them up. It was more of a designed game plan from the master game plan man himself. But if Brissett can't get healthy, it looks like he will be. They've got 10 days before they have to stomp the Buffalo Bills into the ground. But if he can't get healthy, I don't even think they'll sign somebody. You know what they'll do? They'll start Julian Edelman at quarterback because he played tons of quarterback in college, and he'll do well.
Not?
And Belichick will design a game plan, and guess what? It'll work.
There's no, like, even close to sporting equivalent right now for New England, right?
Well, it's like, it's the sport in which the head coach has the biggest impact as well, I would say.
Yeah.
Well, by a million miles,
sure.
Right? You can win a football game with a great coach and very mediocre players.
It's just, I feel like we, you know, you kind of gloss over it because it's been going on for so long and there's like New England apathy, but it really is positively remarkable that this team just, whatever happens, it just wakes up in the AFC title game. Like, you can just, you know.
Set your watch
to it.
It well, does help that they play in that division as well.
I suppose. That's true.
But here's the thing about that game on Thursday. Bill O'Brien, obviously a former Belichick disciple, so if anybody knew maybe what his former mentor would have planned, it should have been him. He obviously
but
did
none of
not.
Them do.
He had, no, none of them do. But not only that is, like, the Houston Texans, especially in that game, just from somebody who analyzes football, they have more talented players at every position. They have the best pass rusher in that game. They have the two best wide receivers in that game. They have the best quarterback in that game, the best running back in that game.
Like, and it's not even close.
And it's not even close. Like, and because Bill O'Brien can't figure out a way to coach past Bill Belichick to get his talented players in a position to just win one-on-one, right? Like, that's all you have to do in that situation. I promise you that DeAndre Hopkins can take any Patriots cornerback. I promise you that Lamar Miller can break a tackle from pretty much any Patriots linebacker. But the system that Belichick goes in with is designed to counter that, and nobody can counterpunch him.
Does it take a bit of the shine off of Tom Brady?
I mean, no, because it's only 3 weeks, but it is crazy when you and you go back to the Matt Cassell season when they, I think they went 11-5.
11, yeah, games. Missed the playoffs. Yeah.
Tom Brady has 4 Super Bowl rings. He's made big throws and big moments. You know, he's going to the Hall of Fame the day after he retires. But it is worth. I feel like it is kind of worth revisiting the Peyton Manning Tom Brady debate because, even though Brady gets the nod because we tend to measure things based on championships, like, if you take a team of just guys, you got, you know, two teams of just guys, and you put Manning on one and you put Brady on one, I feel like the Manning one goes 12-4 and the Brady one, I don't know for sure, you know?
So maybe it does. And Jordan was just smiling.
Because we're going to have this debate on the radio.
We've had it like 5 times.
Oh, have you?
And it's something he is so passionate about. I think last time we had it, it was he and Arden Zwelling was on the show. And they were ganging up on me because I took the Brady side of things. And they were so vehemently pro
so
Peyton.
So what's the knockout blow for the pro Peyton crowd? What do you drop to say? Oh, it's
well. I think it's easier to identify the pushback, which used to be playoff success, right? And
yeah.
and now the
pushback the other way is systems quarterback, right?
Right. And the
which is not true. As much as I think Peyton Manning is a more legendary quarterback by an inch than Tom Brady, Tom Brady's not a system quarterback. Tom Brady's a legitimately great, fantastic Hall of Famer, etc., etc. But
aided by and how many. Hey, Tony Dungy, I'm sure, was fine, but aided by
well, Peyton Manning was his own coach.
Right? Yeah, I almost feel like it wouldn't work with Belichick because you have two like crazy geniuses. Like, they should have been. It was perfect casting that they were opposed.
Well,
not.
If the Patriots do need a quarterback for next week, there is a guy who's freshly out of a job.
Homer Esiason floated that theory, didn't he?
Did he?
That
Oh, I thought I was being original.
That would be
amazing.
I don't think it's going to happen.
I know, but a man can dream. I just want one last shot of Peyton. I want
he
Peyton with
gimmicks.
Belichick.
You heard him.
Yeah, that's true. I want Peyton coaching Belichick. But no, let's talk about just how good the Patriots. We talked about the changeover between eras, and the Patriots don't have that. Like, they're constantly. It's not the players that matter, right? I think the closest thing that we have seen is the Spurs, maybe, just because they've been able to be just as good for
that's a Hall of Famer and Tim Duncan.
Yeah,
and you only have 12 players.
Yeah,
right? So if you have five good ones, you're set for 10 years.
That's right. It's also a sport where when you have one dominant player, if you can get a couple more good ones around you, you know, you're cooking with fire. I mean, the scariest thing in the world would be to be a New England Patriot who gets cut by Bill Belichick because you must be like, well, I guess I'm done because no one ever goes and does anything, right?
Right.
Like, you might as well
Darrell
sign,
Revis
sign,
is,
sign
yeah,
your retirement
right.
papers as soon as he cuts you because it's like, well, clearly, as soon as he spots the little glitch, it's over.
They are masters of maximizing their assets and knowing, when the value is at its peak and then when to cut.
Well, you know what the interesting comparison is, because we were just talking about Team Canada and how that roster is constructed to have, you know, multi-million dollar all-stars all knowing their roles and executing a game plan from a great coach. And the Patriots are like that, only without the multi-million dollar all-stars, right? It's about getting everybody on a roster to buy in to do very specific things that the coach has determined is that's what you need to do for us to win.
Yeah, it's the Patriots way, which is definitely a thing right now, and it helps when you win a whole bunch to get people to buy in. So as mentioned, looks like 4-0 because they got the Buffalo Bills in New England.
They don't need a quarterback for that one. Snap it to LeGarrette Blunt and they can win that game.
Hey, but the Bills don't look so good right now. And things can change quickly. Hey, if they shock the Cardinals at the Ralph on Sunday.
They won't be doing that.
Sure, that's why I called it a shock. If they shock the Cardinals and maybe you finally beat a Patriots team without one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game, you're 2-2, and this conversation seems crazy that I'm about to launch on. It's the Ryan brothers, and they are this team, right? When you have big personalities, big physically, big humans in charge. Rex grabbed Rob off the scrap heap because I don't think anybody was falling over themselves to hire him the way things have gone for him recently. What kind of a leash do they have here now, Jordan? Are we looking at the rest of the season? Is 3-0 not sustainable? They already fired Greg Roman. How many weeks are left for the Ryan brothers?
Well, the news was basically when they fired Greg Roman that it was ownership demanding that something be done. And this was a way to do that without canning the head coach and his brother. And it remains to be seen if that will have a difference. I could see them maybe playing a little better on offense this week just by virtue of most teams seem to pick it up a little bit when you get a new game plan in that's probably more tailored to what the players want to be doing. So I could see them having a slight uptick. But I think the Ryan brothers get the rest of the year, if only because they've already made one big change. Pretty soon, if they don't, if something dramatic doesn't happen, the year will be out of reach anyway. And Sammy Watkins has been hurt, and that's a legitimate injury to your best player, and to a guy that it's not just a guy like Sammy Watkins. For a team like Buffalo, the way that offense is built, Tyrod Taylor likes to throw deep. They're built on game-breaking plays. That opens it up for LeSean McCoy, who can then break some. And when you don't have that threat, there is nothing else on that offense, aside from maybe McCoy breaking one against an eight-man front, that's going to get them. I know Marquise Goodwin's fast. You're not going to sell me on any defense in football being afraid of those wide receivers in that offense without Watkins.
What franchise would you rather be a fan of over the last decade and a half, two decades? The Buffalo Bills, who've been bad. They've been to Super Bowls, and there's hope. Like, there was hope for them this season. Or the Cleveland Browns, where there's just never any hope, and it's just disaster after disaster. Who would you rather be, Ryan?
At least the Browns had the thrill of the team coming back, you know? Like, okay, so you had the devastation, but in life you got to taste devastation to really appreciate when you have something, and they had the thrill of, oh, my God, the Browns are back. That was, what, 17 years ago, maybe?
Honestly, those years without the Browns in Cleveland were probably the happiest years for either Browns fans or Bills fans in that time frame. The 3 years that one of them spent without a football team to cry over.
When the factory of sadness was closed for a little bit, But now they're back. They're both sad sack organizations,
just
to be sure.
It's awful what has happened to Cleveland fans. I mean, every time – that's the thing about the Browns is it's not just like – oh, the Browns are always just terrible and they never have any good players and nothing ever, you know, they actually do manage to sometimes get into a good player and then that good player gets hurt. You get Corey Coleman who looks like, for all the world last week, like a true game-breaking receiver and he breaks his hand. You have Josh Gordon who looked like one of the five best receivers in the NFL and he can't stay off the pot long enough to get on the field. Like Johnny Manziel, everybody liked, and it just went to poop. Like, it's
they,
just
they had just Bill horrible. Belichick.
They had Bill
then
Belichick.
The team left.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It went to poop.
Could you imagine if Belichick, like, if, you know,
that would be his. Yeah. I mean, truly,
we did that in our What If issue of Sportsnet magazine a couple of years ago. What if Belichick had stayed in Cleveland?
You want to impress me, Bill Belichick? Yeah, do the Theo Epstein thing and final saga of your career. Maybe when Tom Brady retires, you go to Cleveland. and revive that franchise. That would impress me.
That would be amazing.
A little bit. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. Ben Annis, Jordan Heath Rawlings, Ryan Dixon. We're live from the World Cup of Hockey Fan Village in the Distillery District. We're in the hometown hockey truck. Speaking of quarterbacks, it is quarterback league, and nobody knows that more than the Minnesota Vikings, who blew their brains out to go get Sam Bradford, and people laughed at the price they paid to get him, all those draft picks. I don't know if they're laughing so much anymore, because he was pretty good, and they beat a good Packers team and looked primed for a repeat in that division.
Well, I mean, in football, draft picks and players only have the value to you that you can use them for right now. It's very much not. Things change so fast, and career-altering injuries happen so often that the whole idea of this is when we talk about tanking in the NBA or in the NHL, the whole idea of like, well, we're just going to tank and write this year off and grab a number one draft pick and do that for a couple years and really build a core. It doesn't work in football. It just doesn't work. There's too many players. There's too much uncertainty. So when you see it, when you're the Vikings and you see a team like they had going into this year with a Hall of Fame running back and, you know, a quarterback that was just coming into his own and Stephon Diggs turning into a really, really good receiver.
Yeah.
And a defense that is top five in the league. And all of a sudden you lose one key part of that, it is worth it to you. It's worth a first and a third round draft pick to have that window, because this is their window, and it's not going to last longer than a year or two, especially this is before Peterson got hurt, of course. But when they're looking at it at the beginning of the year when Bridgewater went down, Peterson's here for this year and maybe not more than that. So, you know, now is the time.
Yeah, and Peterson, we mentioned, is out. Who knows exactly how long he's going to have the surgery? It's some sort of meniscus tear.
Well, he's on IR now, so he can't come back. Even if he heals quickly, he can't come back for another 8 games.
So that's bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's a good portion of the season. We know he's a quick healer. He's done it before on a knee injury. But you mentioned the defense. That's still a tough division. And the Green Bay Packers, I think they've eliminated, it used to be a bugaboo where it was just such a huge hurdle to climb to get past the Green Bay Packers. Maybe there was a mental hurdle reached last season, final game of the regular season when they won the division, although both were guaranteed playoff spots at that point.
Yes.
It's a totally different story, and just ask Arash Madani when we're talking about the playoffs. I'm talking about the regular season, though. The Vikings maybe have gotten past that thing where the Viking or where the Packers are no longer forefront of mind, that they can go throughout their season not worry about the Packers.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, the Vikings match up well with the Packers right now because of what they do on defense. But more than that, I think the Packers are human now. And I think to the other three teams in that division for a good 5 years there, they were just so dominant that the games were half won before they stepped on the field. And the Lions beat the Packers last year when they changed their offensive coordinator. They walked into Lambeau and beat them. The Vikings beat them. You know, I still think, you know, if one game primetime playoff spot on the line, I think you'd probably side with the Packers just because it is a quarterbacks league and Aaron Rodgers, despite a few struggles, is probably still one of the top three or four quarterbacks in the league. But nobody's scared of the Packers anymore.
Well, yeah, what do we make of that? Because I think unquestionably Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, but the lack of sustained success for him in that organization is a little baffling. Is there a coaching problem there, or is it just overstated how good he is?
Yeah, I think the whispers are starting to float around a little bit about the coaching and whether, you know, the system is designed to fully maximize this amazing weapon you have. And as Jordan said, I mean, you have such a short relative shelf life in the NFL that, man, to have a weapon like Aaron Rodgers and not extract every last drop out of it, I mean, if you got to a point where you realize, yeah, maybe this coaching isn't quite what it should be, you'd have to make a move pretty quick there, because you don't want to waste a week of having Aaron Rodgers on your team.
And it seems like a lot has been wasted already, yeah, if that is the case.
It is. And I mean, well, they have, first of all, they have a Super Bowl.
They do.
Yeah. And he has two MVPs. Yeah, well, one Super Bowl is pretty good. I mean, in the lifespan of an NFL franchise.
They're almost far enough removed from it where they can't dine out on
right.
it.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
like,
there's no question that the honeymoon is over, yeah, for sure. But I will say that one of the things I think over the last little while has been the receivers. Jordy Nelson got hurt, and that immediately affected, had a trickle-down effect on the entire rest of their offense, because Randall Cobb is a guy who needs space open underneath. He needs somebody running clear-out routes in order to be effective, and then when they bump Randall Cobb up to the main receiver, that meant that Devontae Adams all of a sudden had to be the second receiver, and he can't catch anything. Like, if you look at the percentage of completions thrown to him, he's, I think... 51 out of 52 wide receivers that have 100 targets in the NFL over the last couple years in terms of the number of percentage of them that he catches. And that's just, that's going to make any quarterback look terrible.
Yeah, so far, the Packers have looked, okay. They're 1-1, but yeah, the Vikings.
But as Nelson gets that speed back and can take the top off of defenses again, I think you'll see Aaron Rodgers look a lot better.
Week 3 in the NFL getting underway proper on Sunday. That'll do it! For us, for Jordan Heath Rawlings and Ryan Dixon, I'm Ben Ennis. We were live, and still continue to be, from the World Cup of Hockey Fan Village in the Distillery District in the Hometown Hockey Truck. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.